I thought I heard a sound podcast.
This is going to be just a very casual conversation. I'm just really interested in learning more about your project and you. I really like what you're doing, Analog Heart. I specifically am enjoying your latest release, User Pleasure Guaranteed, which was released January of 2024 on Lonely Ghost Records. And yeah. Thanks for coming on the podcast. For everybody tuning in, this is Mick, and you're listening to I Thought I Heard a Sound podcast, and may have guessed I'm talking with Analog Heart. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I appreciate you having me on. I actually, I think I follow y'all's, I get the notifications to my phone for your guys' Twitter whenever you post articles and stuff like that.
No way. Oh, that's awesome.
John over at Lonely Ghost encouraged me to do it because he always likes your guys' write-ups, and Sierra writes for you guys now, correct?
No, it's just me. It's the whole blog is just me.
The whole blog is just you. Man, that's a lot of work. I really admire that level considering how frequently you guys put stuff out.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't write as often as I'd like to. If I could find the time for it, I'd be writing a couple of times a day, but as it is, I'm currently at, you know, just a few times a week. But
I get you. Awesome. Yeah. But for a single person operation, that's like a really good output, considering that even for our own labels, like little blog that they started, we're only getting maybe like a couple a month, depending on if somebody wants to write in. So like having that output of getting a couple a week just by yourself is like, that's really impressive.
Yeah. Well, there's just so much good music being released all the time. It's impossible to keep up, and I wish I could give a shout out to everything that I end up, enjoying and appreciating every week, but, I end up having to just be choosy because of time constraints and, you know, life.
Yeah, I get you.
Yeah. So, I mean, talking about excellent music, again, I love User Pleasure Guaranteed, and just the whole project, Analog Heart. I love the aesthetics. I love, you know, the fact that you perform with a monitor on your head. Just everything about it is awesome. And if you don't mind, I'd like to ask you about the origins of the project. What is the point where Analog Heart came off the assembly line and, you know, found its way into our hearts?
Yeah, so originally how this all came about is in about 2018 or so, my first actual band ended up breaking up. And I say actual band, it was just me and one other person. And originally we lived in the same place, but I moved down to Georgia in 2016. And I've been there ever since. But they lived still elsewhere, like back in my hometown. But we'd kept trying to make music on and off before my friend had a kid in 2018. And he was just like, yeah, I don't have the time for this anymore. And so I was just like, well, I guess let me see what I've got. Because I didn't want to give up just doing music just because I didn't have anything else to do. I'd never done a solo thing before that wasn't like a DJ or electronic music situation. And I was just like, okay, well, let's see like what can be done in like a one man band scenario. So what I did is I went back through all of my like audio files, and I was just like, okay, well, let's check some of the stuff I've written over the years to see if I've gotten anything that I would want to like bring back up or work on. And so what I did is I ended up finding just a short little guitar riff that I had written, not actually super long before the band breakup happened. And I was just like, I can probably work with this. And so from 2018 to about 2020, I had, over the course of time, worked up a song, and that song actually ended up being digital off of Digital Soul, which is technically the title track and part of why I named it what I did. And so it's just slowly over time, I was just like, okay, well, what am I really into right now? And at the time, I had started listening to like some emo music again, because I had a gap from about 2010 to 2018 where I didn't listen to like any emo stuff whatsoever, because I got really super into like all the Warped Tour metalcore stuff at that time. I think the only emo bands I was listening to that were like contemporary were like maybe like Bayside and who else? I think it was just Bayside was like the only emo band I was listening to, because I didn't like I don't want to refer to them how I usually do. They got an album with a knife on the cover. Then there's another album where the guy's got like a purple face. Oh, I can't think of their name for the life of me.
This is an emo band, huh?
Yeah. And they're like a bigger, they were like a bigger emo band at the time. No, not Palette Knife, but I do love Palette Knife.
I was about to ask you, yeah. Like, you're not talking about Palette Knife, are you?
No, it's Front Bottoms. That's who I was thinking of.
Oh my God. I was just about to say that, yeah.
Yeah, I knew a lot of people who were into them, but I just could, there was just something about it that just didn't really appeal to me. And so, because of that, I'd just been completely out of the loop. And what I ended up doing and what got me back into it is that, I used to have to drive my partner to work a lot because they just don't really like to do it. And they had their iPods still, and they're about 5 years older than me. So they were a lot more conscious in the early 2000s than I was, because I was just listening to whatever was on the radio or whatever I could get a hold of off of like LimeWire and stuff like that. But they were a lot more conscious and picky of what music they had. So they had a bunch of the more mainstream 2000s emo stuff, as well as some deeper cuts. Like, for instance, they were the person who actually introduced me to The World is a Beautiful Place, because they just randomly had it on their iPod and it would just play in the car sometimes, and I'm like, wow, this is awesome. But so I started to get back into emo stuff, and then at the same time I was getting like really, really into a lot of funk stuff, because I used to listen to like Vaporwave a lot, and a lot of those albums pull from like 80s funk records and things like that. And there's one that particularly I latched onto, and that was a band called Zap. You might not know them off the top of your head, but if you've ever heard the song California Love by Tupac, there's that the California Love part. That's actually Roger, who is the lead vocalist for Zap, who uses a talk box with a synthesizer instead of a vocoder. I just don't have a talk box. And so I was like, what's the best thing I can do as an alternative to that? And so I started working that into the vocals, because I can't sing. I can get the note clarity. I can get the volume. Can't do pitch. Cannot do pitch for the life of me. So I listened to my first few like vocal demos, and I was like, oh, this does not sound very good. And I didn't want to buy Auto-Tune, like Melodyne or whatever. But I was like, well, what if I did something like kind of unique with it? And because I was really into Zap at the time, I was just like, oh yeah, he kind of was doing a bit of an Auto-Tune thing using a synthesizer. So I took my vocal recording, pitch corrected it, and then converted it to MIDI, and then I turned that into a synthesizer track, and then ran it through a vocoder, and that's kind of how I got the whole thing. It wasn't until, I want to say, 2020, maybe a couple months before the release of the first single, which was Analog, that I was like, oh, I should probably develop an aesthetic for this, because I didn't have one at the time. And so hastily, I went online and was just like, where can I find a TV head? And so I ended up going online and buying one, and the person didn't have any TVs. They just had computer monitors, and I was just like, okay, that'll do. And I got it in, and then I was like, wait, if I'm making music that sounds like it's from the 2000s, and this is the kind of computer I had in the 2000s, I can just kind of merge my lived experience and create a whole deal out of it. And so that's kind of where everything came from, is me purchasing this thing in a slapdash moment to make up for the fact that it would sound weird seeing somebody just have completely affected vocals just as like a normal person, and then just building the aesthetic around that.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. So this project really grew out of the technology that you were utilizing, and you just ended up sort of conceptualizing things around some of the tech solutions that you had implemented, sounds like.
Yeah, usually when I give somebody a summed up version, I always say the voice came first and then the aesthetic came later.
Yeah, so is it like ever hard to play with the monitor on your head? I know that you do play live sometimes.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not something you do all the time, but yeah, what is it like playing with playing in character, I guess?
Yeah, so part of the reason I don't do a lot of shows, other than the fact that it's been a little bit difficult to get out to shows since the pandemic, just because I've been having, hilariously enough, just car issues instead. But due to that, I don't really play a lot of shows, because there's like a lot of prep and planning that goes into it, because my setup and teardown alone takes about the same amount of time as it would for a full band, but it's just me, and it kind of gets... I wouldn't say it feels rude to take up that much time when you're just one person, but it kind of sucks having to like bring the amp in, bring the guitar in, set up a guitar stand, set up the computer, set up everything, make sure it's working with the monitors, set up the vocoder and voice and synthesizer, and it ends up taking like 20, 25 minutes to get everything set up, on top of having to create all the backing tracks and everything like that, because since it's not a full band, I am playing to just the recordings I made at home of everything, mixed and mastered in a way that it'll work live. So because of that, the actual everything going into the playing is 10 times harder than the actual playing itself, which is great. I love doing it, but setting everything up so that I can do it is so much of a hassle that it almost makes me not want to do it sometimes. Just because of the level of work that goes into it, and the not having a team to help me get through it faster.
Right, right. Yeah. Do you think that it would be, if you had the money, do you think it would be possible to like hire somebody, or to have somebody come along to help you, or do you think it's just too complicated?
No, it's not super complicated. It's just making sure that everything works the same every time takes a lot of like checking and double checking. And I definitely, if I had one to two people, it would be set up and tear down to be like 5 minutes, and it would help keep the illusion up, because if you're paying attention, you can tell who I am in person. Granted, I'm pretty lucky and most people don't pay attention, so most of the time I don't have to deal with, hey man, nice set, after the set. But yeah, I think having like one or two people would be great, especially because being posted up at the merch table afterwards is a little awkward, because people are like, oh, where'd the guy go? And I'm just like, I'll take your money though. I can definitely help out with the whole, if you want to buy anything. But it does mean that I have to leave for like 25 minutes to 40 minutes. I have to leave the merch table just completely unattended, which is, that means no sales at any point during that time. So yeah, one to two people would definitely, like, it would make it way easier for me to do. But having the money to do that and finding somebody who would be interested in doing that is always a little bit difficult because people have their own schedules and what they want to do and things like that.
Yeah. You are actually able to go incognito at your shows, though.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
So I hate to give it away, but it's always really fun. I bring a second pair of pants and shoes.
Well, now that this interview is sort of exposing your plan, are you going to have to change things up? Are you going to have to develop a new strategy for handling merch at your shows?
Oh, no, I don't think so. Not enough people are going to pay attention to the shoes I'm wearing. There's a couple people who I've already told, and they just straight up didn't remember, and they were like, where did you go?
So are you like a staple at shows in your area? Like, do people recognize you, and then like when you are playing a show, like wonder where you went during the set, and then you come back and you're like, hey man, you missed a great set.
I had that happen at like 2 shows I've played, but generally a lot of the times with the shows I do, a lot of the people are already in on it. There have been a couple times where I've intentionally like not let somebody know. Like I played with Default Friends recently and I didn't tell them. And they were like, wait, where did you go? And I was just like, oh, I just played. And they were like, wait, what? And it completely like blew their minds. I was half tempted to film it, but that's not my place to do. But it was great because I like just walked in and they were like, hey, where did you go? Just really confused.
That's pretty funny. So why is anonymity so important for this project?
I think a couple of reasons, mostly because a lot of the subject matter that I cover is, I wouldn't say not relatable, but if you're able to apply a blank face to it instead of a real face, it makes it so that it's a little bit easier to get into the mindset. It's like, it's a good way to put it. It's like whenever they make like a really boring looking main character in like a manga or a video game where it's just like supposed to be like an everyman, you apply yourself into the situation of, but instead of doing it as doing like a boring person, I do it in the way of like a non-human subject so that you can just kind of transpose yourself into the space, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, you're supposed to see yourself in Analog Heart. You're not supposed to see you specifically.
The exception to that being User Pleasure Guaranteed, because I kind of wrote that album about me kicking my own ass because I hadn't been going to shows and was just like, why am I not getting to play at all? And it's like, it's because you're not going to shows, you're not meeting people, you're not connecting with people, you're the only person to blame for that. And that's kind of what the album's about. So everything else after that, though, is pretty much going to be like a you can insert yourself into the situation. User Pleasure Guaranteed is kind of the outlier because it's just an album I needed to make myself go like, hey, take things seriously or else you're not going to get the opportunities you want.
I feel like everybody experiences that, though. Like everybody has things that they want, but it's always a little ambiguous how you're going to get to, you know, where you currently are to where you want to be, right?
Yeah, and I definitely do think it's possible to just insert yourself into like User Pleasure Guaranteed, but it's one that I didn't set out to make it that way, if that makes sense.
That does. So what does the title mean then to you, User Pleasure Guaranteed?
Yeah, so for me, because I wrote the album essentially as like a letter to myself to like get it together, User Pleasure Guaranteed is me saying that after I make this album, I'll get what I want out of it, basically. And it's kind of like a reminder to myself that if I do the things that I should be doing as an artist and even as a business person, that I will get the pleasures that I want.
Okay. Like I'm wise. You seem to be, you know, kind of giving yourself a hard time about wasting time, right? Like, you know, not making the most of the time that you have. And I guess that is about you not investing the time that you should in your art or in you know, meeting with people or doing things that are important. That's what I get from that, based on what you just told me.
Yeah, that's dead on. That song specifically was inspired by a show that was actually supposed to be in town that it kind of happened, but it didn't end up fully happening the way it was originally going to. There was a show in town that was going to be Hospitality, which is one of our big local screamo bands. It's if you know Jack Morris from Tooth Cemetery, that's Jack's screamo band. Newgrounds Death Rugby. It was supposed to be Hey I Love You on the bill too, but they couldn't make it. And then there was a surprise set from like Michael Sarah Palin. And I saw the existence of the show and I was just like, God, that should have been me. And then I was like, wait, why should it have been me? I'm not putting in the work for that to be me. If I want it to be me, I got to put in the work for it to be me.
Wow. Yeah, that is a stacked bill. I'm sorry that you weren't on that bill.
And that's the thing, is that I can only feel so sorry for myself about it, because these are people that I know. If they had wanted me on the bill, they would have put me on the bill. And it's not any fault of theirs. It's that I just don't have the turnout they need for a show like that. And the only person who can change that is going to be me. And that's why you have like the lyrics like, I want my time back. I can do it better this time. Because if I hadn't just moped, I would have gone, okay, well, if I want to be on the show, let me play enough shows and meet enough people that they would want to put me on the show.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you definitely are pleading with a higher power, it seems like, on that song, telling whoever is in charge of the universe, hey, you know, if you let me keep going, I can do better. Yeah, and it's interesting that it's this stacked bill that's causing you to, you know, have this realization too. I mean, it sounds like a killer show. Were you able to go to that show? Or,
oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the fill-in ended up being a band called Love Locket, which is a really good, they're like a new metalcore kind of band. They're really great. I don't want to diminish what they did to get there. they absolutely 100% earned that spot, and they had great turnout for that show too.
Yeah, I haven't heard of them, but I like the name, and I like that there's a metalcore band called Love Locket. I'm definitely going to have to check that out.
Yeah, it's LUVLOCKET. They do a little bit of like a new metal kind of deal. It's really neat. I actually genuinely, if you like Cheem and stuff like that, I would recommend you check them out.
Yeah, well, Cheem are amazing. They're like the best band going right now, at least in my opinion.
No, I get you. I'm never going to. They're one of the best live bands that I've seen in DIY, and I've seen them 3 times now. And each time it's been just like absolutely mind blowing.
Going to another one of your songs, I really like Windows 98 Maze, not only because, you know, I have very fond memories of watching that screensaver as a kid, but also, just because it really seems on point for the themes of the album. It a little bit more and give me some insights into it.
Yeah, so that was actually a cut track from Digital Soul originally. That was supposed to be the third track in place of CPU, but I felt that the instrumental didn't really fit that well. So I shelved it, because I didn't have any lyrics for it. So I shelved it, and I, when starting User Pleasure Guaranteed, I was just like, okay, well, I wrote the first song, which was Thank You for Playing. That's the song that I wrote first out of everything. And I was just like, well, so I don't really have any new ideas at the moment. Let me try, see what I've got in my folder. And I listened to that song and was like, oh, hey, this would be great. And pulling something from like a cut thing from my other album, giving it new life, kind of works with the theming of the album. And so what I ended up doing is I expanded the actual like instrumental of the song. It was originally only about 2-something, and now it's like 3:30 or so. It's a lot longer than it originally was. The only thing that was the same was the chorus, and the part with the bass tapping has always been there, because that's actually how I wrote the song, is that bass tapping section came first. I'm pulling up lyrics so that I can dissect this a little bit better for you, because the only lyrics I can think of off the top of my head are the ones from the what's it called, the breakdown bridge section, because that's the part that I wrote lyrics for last, hilariously enough, despite the fact that it was the part of the instrumental that was written first. But basically the lyrics on the song, a lot of that is, I'm getting it pulled up so I can give you a better idea. How do I see this on mobile? Because I don't have a file for it on my, where are you there?
That's okay. I mean, I have the lyrics in front of me. I'm on your Bandcamp. So, you know, you've got, it starts out trapped inside, and I don't think I wanna be let out of this maze I made for me to hide in. That seems pretty, you know, on point for what you're telling me about, you know, how you're feeling when you're making this album, that you're feeling kind of stuck, right? And you didn't feel like, you know, you were progressing in any sort of manner. And, you know, that Windows 95 maze, you never find your way out. Like, you will run that maze for as long as the computer is inactive. So it feels like a pretty good metaphor, you know?
Yeah. So now that I've got everything pulled up, I can go a little bit more into it. So, the chorus is the first part that I wrote of it lyrically, and it is the core of the song, which I know generally the chorus is mostly the core of the song, but, you kind of did hit the nail on the head that it's this sort of like mental maze you make for yourself of like excuses to be like, oh, well, I can't do this thing because I got this reason. I don't really want to do that because I have this other thing that I have to do. And part of the song is about just intentionally getting yourself lost in there because you don't want to get out of it, because that would make you have to actually go and do the things that you're supposed to do, even if they're uncomfortable. Then you have the screamed sections. So this is actually something I haven't brought up yet, but generally for the most part, the screamed sections on pretty much all of my songs are internal monologue versus external monologue. So the sung stuff is all like the externalized stuff. So for instance, just being like, oh yeah, no, sorry, I can't go out today, I don't want to, I've got this other thing I got to do. Whereas like the internal screamed vocal is the like, what are you doing? Don't do that. Go out and do the thing that you want to do. Go do it. And that's clear by how it's kind of more of a dissection when you actually look at the way that the lyrics are written, as opposed to being, what's the right way to put it? Instead of being like vocalized, because I'm trying to think of a good way to describe this, because it's a little bit difficult to 100% get across the way in which it was written. So basically any of the clean vocals are like the excuses and the, oh, well, I'll do it laters. while the screamed vocals are your own internal monologue of like, I need to get this stuff done. This is what I need to do. This is how I need to do it. And then your body just not, or your brain just not wanting to actually do it, despite you having a clear internal drive to do what you want to do. Part of the reason for that is because I have like ADHD, so I suffer from like executive dysfunction. So you have kind of the issue of just not doing things that you would want to do or need to do, just because you just can't make yourself do it. And I don't know if that really comes across in the lyrics, but that's why I do the two differing voices, specifically for that reason, to differentiate between the two thought processes.
Okay, so kind of the battle between a lazy devil and a scramsy angel.
Yeah, basically. And it works because I hate to say it, but the vocoding is kind of a little bit of a lazy solution to a very solvable issue of just taking vocal lessons.
Well, it's also part of your vibe now, too. I mean, it's part of the identity of the project. You're kind of like an anonymous ghost in the machine, and people are supposed to see themselves in the reflection of your monitor, I guess.
Yeah, and that's kind of why when I say that like user pleasure guaranteed is a kind of a personal record, it's stuff like that where it's like it wouldn't 100% make sense unless you were me or heard the way that I talked about it, that you would go, oh, that's why I couldn't like 100% click on this specific aspect, or why this didn't 100% make sense to me. Cause I'm sure people can get 80% of the way there. It's not, there's nothing super, super deep in there that like is impossible to decode. It's just the 20% background of it that people might not know unless they heard me talk about it.
Yeah, well, that's why I asked you on, because I was curious.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like the scramsy parts of the record. I feel like they're really well integrated with everything else. You know, the funky beats, you know, the emo sort of pop hooks, and I feel like you flow into them really, really smoothly too. Like I don't feel like they're jarring at all. And I don't feel like they are very harsh on the ears either, but they totally get across the sense of disappointment, right, or irritation, and you know, just a sense that there could be something better happening at the moment if the protagonist of the song, you know, made different choices. Like I really feel like they're great in that respect.
Yeah. And that's, I've always been able to do harsh vocals since I was like younger. I taught myself by like doing like screaming to songs in my car whenever I was a teenager. And so it's kind of a skill that I didn't really want to let go to waste, because originally, and you'll notice it a lot more on Digital Soul, but there's maybe three songs that have screaming on them, and then the rest is all just completely like normal. Reason being that like I originally didn't set out to have that like internalized versus externalized thing. And it wasn't until the actual song Analog with the breakdown bit in it that I was just like, well, let me see if I can like use this for like a narrative purpose instead of just having like a heavy section just to have a heavy section. And so after that, I've just started integrating it as like a thematic thing, which ended up working out. A lot of people like that. There's one singular Rate Your Music person who was like, I don't really like it, but I'm gonna cut them some slack because they still gave me like a 3.5.
Oh yeah, that's a pretty good score for Rate Your Music.
Yeah.
Yeah, those you know, the Rate Your Music crowd have high standards, or sometimes I think they just like being assholes.
Hey, at least it's not what's the metalcore one? Is it Crate? People on Crate are horrible. I always see James from I'm forgetting the name of the band off the top of my head. Cybergrind band. They don't have any guitars. wow, man, I'm doing poorly today at remembering people. I'm not a very on this person, if you can tell. Blind Equation, yeah. I always see James from Blind Equation post the stuff from Crate, and I'm like, man, people are horrible on there. I would take 100 Radio Music users over one Crate user.
Do you feel like, you know, when you get very critical responses, very, you know, maybe you could even say unforgiving responses to your music, do you feel like that helps at all in any way? Does it help you evaluate what you're doing? Or is it just, you know, is it just like getting blindsided? It's just like a hammer to the temple. It's like, what? What did I do to deserve that?
So I've always been pretty good about handling criticism, because it's, I'm not a hater, but I personally have people in my life who are haters. And so I can see like that mindset, because it's not a personal thing that they do. They're very specific in what they like and dislike, to the point where if something's not what they like, they automatically dislike it. And it's for most people, it would be more of a middling experience, but for them, it's just like a, I don't care about this whatsoever, so I'm going to rate it as low as I can. So a hater's one is actually a true three. So unless somebody like specifically goes out of their way to say something, I'm usually just like, yeah, whatever. That's why I don't take that Rate Your Music user. Like they gave a true, honest review. It wasn't negative. They were just like, I just don't really like this aspect of it, so I'm not going to ever hold anything against them. I think the only time I've ever had somebody like give a negative feedback that actually like bothered me was for some reason, and because I on Instagram recently, I did and TikTok, but I did a riff a day every day for January, and the riff for Wise Unwise popped off really hard, and I had all kinds of people who in there who were just like, why is this riff so bad, can't you write something better? And I'm just like, what do you want out of this? What do you want me to do? It's just, you're just saying it's bad. You're not saying anything constructive. You're not like, I don't like this about it. It's just like, this is bad.
Right. That is just someone dumping on you for no reason. And yeah, not even because they have like a specific preference, like you were saying with maybe a crate user. They are just, you know, seeing somebody on the internet doing something, and for whatever reason, they have to take a crap.
Yeah, exactly. It's like YouTube comments used to be like that. And granted, I think they're still a little bit like that, but it's not nearly as bad as it used to be, say in like 2010 to 2014. I remember seeing like videos for like very popular bands who would have just like the most vile things said to them in their comments, just because somebody was like, yeah, I don't like the song. I think you guys should die and they should kill your whole family. And it's just like, how did y'all get to this point?
Right. Yeah. What level of depression are they on, and how can we get them help?
That's somebody who needs a hand for sure.
Yeah. Something that, you know, I wanted to bring up to you, and I don't know if you're open to discussing it, but because you are an artist that relies so much on technology, I wanted to get your take on AI and just how it's evolved over the last couple of years, how it is sort of increasingly present online and, you know, is increasingly, you know, being used by, you know, artists who are signed to labels, you know, companies to help with the art that they maybe put up on their social media accounts. And I just wanted to get your take on it, and you know, how it fits into the, you know, the creative process, or affects the creative process from your perspective.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good question, just because since so much of my stuff is technology based, it's definitely something that I would have an opinion on. I don't know if you're in the DIY Discord or not, but we actually had a really good discussion recently about it after the whole Mannequin Pussy thing, where they had their music video that was partially AI. We had a pretty good discussion about how realistically, obviously AI is never going to replace a person. That's not possible, because what it does is not something that a person can do. And because of that, it should be used for things that people can't do. So like, for instance, back in the heyday of generating nonsense images, that was what I thought with the peak of it was with I don't know if you're familiar with I'm Letting Unseen Forces Take the Wheel, or Twink Obliterator, who it's a, they're two cyber grind groups, but they used to use basically nonsense AI generated images for album covers and things like that, which were sourced like ethically. And that is what kind of what I think it should be for, is just creating just a confusing image that your brain has trouble processing, not recreating somebody's whole art style and putting them out of a job. It's the same way that, like, my most recent album is collage work. I hired my friend to make it because I wanted an album cover and I couldn't Photoshop it in a way that I thought was satisfactory. So I was like, hey, can you do collage work on this and make this? And if I had, like, used AI, obviously that person's job would have been replaced. And that's part of the problem with the way that a lot of people use it, is that what used to simply just be something you would go online and ask somebody to do, they're now just going, like, let me put this into, there's DALL-E and Midjourney. Let me put this into Midjourney and get this image that doesn't exactly look like what I was going for, but I didn't have to pay for it. So, and it's frustrating because, like, there's definitely cool uses for it that could absolutely revolutionize some, the things that some people do, but because it's bad for the environment, sourced unethically, and being used unethically by businesses and stuff like that, it's almost at a point where, like, there's no point in trying to defend it, because it's just being used in a way that is not beneficial and probably won't be beneficial until it's completely abandoned. Like the blockchain stuff, it realistically, having a permanent record of something forever is like a cool idea, but because it's bad for the environment and largely relies on a bunch of shady stuff, there's not really a benefit to using it. Like, there was a, oh gosh, who was it? There was a music festival that used that as like a permanent unhackable ticket, which, like, that's kind of a good idea, but you guys went about it in a way that is really, like, negative and not good for anybody. So, like, what's the point of even doing it at that point? And there's plenty of good uses for AI, because, I mean, at the end of the day, it's just an algorithm that you feed stuff into and it spits something back out. Recently in the world of, like, guitar stuff, there is a VST that somebody made, which you can use as an amp modeler, that will take your real existing amp or your real existing guitar pedal, you feed some pink noise into it, and it recreates that thing on your computer, which is really super helpful because there's, like, a lot of pedals that don't exist online in any sort of way. They're just a physical thing that you have. And granted, you could say, well, why don't you just plug your pedal board in? But what if you sold that pedal, you don't have it anymore, if it's like an expensive piece of gear that you don't own? Having some way to access that would be, like, really great. And just the stuff like that makes me go, oh, of course there's a good ways to use AI, but so many people aren't using it in good ways, that what's the point of even using it at that point? It's like, it's kind of like American car infrastructure being used to get rid of public transportation, which is better, if that makes any sense.
Okay. Yeah. So the way that you see it is that as long as it is in some way aligned with or constrained by ethics, constrained by the actual intentions of, like, a human being, and isn't, like, replacing jobs, you know, it can be okay. Like, sort of the digital sausage that you were saying, you know, some digital grindcore, some cyber grindcore bands use for their album art. They're using AI to create these images specifically because of how uncanny it will be. And that in some way plays back into their art and what they want people's response to their art being. And it's not replacing any jobs. It's not taking bread out of anybody's cupboard, but you think that there's a lot of room for abuse of this tool as well.
Yeah. It's something that could definitely be used to do cool things and interesting things, but because of the people who are interested in it, by and large, it's not going to be used in that way. And that's what's kind of frustrating about the whole situation. And it's, you know, what's a good way to do it? Do you remember all of the weird, like, small creators who have had their stuff co-opted by, like, the American right wing? Granted, the creation itself is not bad, but it's kind of forever tainted by this negative association. That's kind of how AI is, where this thing could have been a totally perfectly fine thing, but because of the people who are using it in such a way that it's unethical or straight up like bad or evil, it's kind of just a tainted thing now.
So it would be hard for like a DIY band or a band that sort of came out of a scene where people are, you know, invested in them and what they represent to deploy these tools in a way that you wouldn't see as problematic.
Pretty much, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I have not actually seen the Mannequin Pussy music video that utilized AI. I have seen the discourse on Twitter, and I know that people have a lot of opinions about it. You know, and it's just been interesting to see all the different responses. It does feel like this was an unforced error on their part.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They did not have to do what they did. But, you know, also, I mean, you have to cut an artist a little bit of slack when it comes to, you know, how they want to promote their art, you know?
Yeah.
I'm willing to hear them out when it comes to, you know, their explanation for their reasons, even if I totally sympathize with people's response.
Yeah, well, that's my thing, is they kind of backed themselves into a corner that they didn't need to, because they're not the only band that's actually used the same videographer director. They're just the first one who's gotten flack for it, because their response to using it is so inflammatory when it didn't really need to be. Like, they could have just coasted and not had any kind of drama whatsoever, because other people have used the same exact guy who made their video with no kerfuffle before. So I absolutely get where you are on the situation, as opposed, like, in regards to you're absolutely willing to hear somebody out, and it just turns out that they kind of shot themselves in the foot with it.
Yeah, that's too bad, because they're, you know, I've liked their music.
Oh, yeah,
past,
no, they're a great band. I've seen them a couple times now, and they're always phenomenal. It's just a shame that they would kind of like turn this into a whole thing. It's a very DIY thing to try and defend your bad decision as a good decision and call everybody else haters. Because Lord, has that been an issue consistently for the entire time I've been in DIY?
Speaking of things that that people incorporate into their music and technology, I'm wondering, and this is a total digression from what we were talking about before, but I'm wondering where you get most of the beats and you know, the rhythms that you employ in your music, because it, like, I really love how genuinely funky a lot of it sounds, and I'm stoked to hear that a lot of it's coming from inspiration from forward-thinking artists like Zap. But I'm like, is that all like sounds that you make yourself, or are you collaborating with someone else for some aspects of your album, as far as like the electronic beats and stuff? Where's all that coming from?
So a lot of, like, specifically for a lot of the electronics, anything that doesn't sound like real drums, that is me attempting to copy one of three things. One is anything Prince did. Because the specific drum machine sounds I used, except for on Phased Out, are all Lin drums, which is the drum machine that he helped popularize, because it used actual real drum samples all the way back in the 80s to give it the most realistic sounding drums that they could on a drum machine. And so a lot of that was what I would do, is I would take pop punk and emo drums, say from like bands like Fall Out Boy, or in a lot of cases, like Armor for Sleep was a big influence on the emo stuff. And what I would do is I would take what they're doing, put it on the Lin drum, and then I would go, okay, how can I turn this into like a more traditional, like, funk beat or something like that? And then there's like a lot of 90s R&B is another place that I pull a lot of my drum ideas from, as well as like the early kind of horrorcore rap stuff, like 3-6 Mafia and things like that, because a lot of them were using like funk samples as their drums, so they'd be pulling from kind of the same stuff that I was doing with the Prince stuff. And so basically I would like go, okay, so here's what they heard and here's how they used it. Let me listen to this and hear how I can use it. I should go ahead and say, I don't have any samples on any of my songs other than the vocal sample at the beginning of Thank You for Playing. Everything is just straight up programmed into my DAW using different drum machines. But basically what I'm doing is I'm just listening to artists that I think have good drums and then reinterpreting what they do into the context of my own music. I've had outside help exactly once, and that was on Phased Out, because I felt that the beat at the beginning was really dry. And I reached out to Leave Nelson B, who's another artist on Lonely Ghost, and I was just like, hey.
Damn. Yeah, he's really good.
I was like, hey, you make pretty much what I'm going for here. Can you listen to this and tell me what I'm missing? And basically he was just like, okay, yeah, add this, and this. Put this effect on there. It'll make it sound more authentic. And so that's how that came out. Granted, his advice was pretty much just put some reverb on the snare, put a clap in at a certain interval, change the hi-hats. Basically, he helped me like restructure the beat in a way that it would work better with driving the song instead of being a compliment, because that's the thing about the drum beat in Phased Out, is that it kind of controls the first half of the song until the bass guitar takes over in the second half. It's also important to note, all of the things that sound like real drums is all, that's all programmed VST stuff. That's not actually, nobody actually played that.
Okay. Yeah, that's all. That's a really complete answer. And, you know, it sounds like to the extent that you have collaborated, you've been collaborating with the best.
Yeah. And I have a really bad habit of just kind of relying on myself and not asking for help from other people, and then letting my stuff sit for a long time and going like, man, I wish I had music that I could put out, and then realizing that maybe if I asked other people for help, I could actually put that music out. That's kind of my plan with LP1, is to start asking for people to help me so that I can put out a better product, because I think with User Pleasure Guaranteed, I've kind of hit the extent of like the quality I can make on a record just by myself, because it is a good record, but if I had to rate it personally, it's like a 6.5, 7 out of 10. There are things that I could do if I had a producer mindset to elevate it and bring it up to like a higher level. And that's kind of what I'm wanting to do with LP1 when I finally get around to it, is work with people who have a bit more insight than I do into production and filling out a song, adding parts, making things more catchy, stuff like that.
How far out do you think we are from getting to hear some of LP1?
Considering that I have maybe 3 demos and I want to go for 12 songs, probably going to be not until like maybe late 2025. I might put out a single later this year. It just depends on how quick I get stuff done, basically, is all it is.
Okay, cool. Cool. Yeah. I mean, I'm always in the market for more of your music. And I'm excited that there's a full LP in the works.
Yeah. And that's what's funny is there's technically 3 LPs in the works, and I have more done actually for the LP3 than I do LP1 or LP2, which is maybe not the best way to go about working on things, but it's, they're each really different sonically, while still kind of maintaining the core of like the crossover with like the funk, post-hardcore and emo stuff. Actually, one of the LP3 songs is technically out. It's, if you've heard Shugazi, that's kind of what I'm going to be going for on that. But that's like way down the road.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. I didn't realize that you had 3 albums in the works and that you are already planning 2 albums ahead. That's pretty incredible. Yeah, I maybe you don't give yourself enough credit for everything you do, you know, maybe put on your to-do list, because I know we started out this conversation with you saying that this album or this most recent EP, User Pleasure Guaranteed, was about self-motivating yourself and getting yourself on track to, you know, be productive and get stuff done. When, I mean, you just now told me that you're working on three LPs at one time. Maybe you're being too productive.
Well, that's exactly the problem, is that I get ahead of myself. So yeah, I've got three LPs in the works, but considering I've got five songs across three LPs, that's maybe not the best.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, there's you know, there is some virtue in taking things one step at a time too, yeah. Right? And you climb a mountain, you don't eat it, right? Like you got to do it one step at a time.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is, and that's kind of why I want to work with some other people, is to, that'll help keep me on track. Because I mean, the only reason the songs exist for those other LPs is because I would write a song and I would go, okay, this is really cool, but this doesn't work for what I'm going for. Because that, like for example, Windows 98 Maze is a perfect example of that, where it's like, I wrote this song and it's really cool. Does it fit with this record at all? No, it doesn't. So let me put that away for something else. And the problem is, instead of just putting it away for something else, I have to conceptualize a reason for it to exist. And that's kind of where I get off track. But it's not a terrible thing to do, but it just definitely does make it a little bit more difficult to put together a clear, concise project in a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah, I can see that. All right, one last question. How much of an influence is Sonic the Hedgehog on you?
This is going to sound crazy. Barely at all. I know it's going to sound nuts. Because, like, I literally, before this, I was playing Sonic Adventure 1 again. But the thing is, you would think all of these things that I consume would have the influence, but it just doesn't. And it's like, it drives me crazy personally, because I've got all these visuals and I've got all these, like, bits and pieces that I've, like, custom made for myself of Sonic Adventure 2 stuff that I've just not used for anything whatsoever, because I'm like, no, it doesn't really fit. So it's like, it should be an influence, but I just can't make it one, if that makes sense.
Okay, so you're trying to find space for him, but yeah, right. Well, he's tough to contain, right? Like, it's hard to consolidate him down to one single aspect and be like, hey, this is what's going to work for this project, and this is all that's going to work.
Yeah,
right.
Because originally I had planned, and I still got to get this figured out, because I can't do it myself. I want to get a model replacement mod for Sonic Adventure 2, so that I can put a little analog heart model in place of Sonic, and then do City Escape and have that be for a music video. But I still have to figure out a context in which that'll work for a song, because as it stands, I think the closest one I could get is maybe Thank You for Playing, but that'd have to be a part of a larger bit, because that song's got so much going on in it that you can't just do one thing throughout the whole deal.
Well, it's obvious that you put a lot of thought into your music, and I find that really inspiring.
I really appreciate that. Sometimes a little bit too much thought, but I think a little bit too much thought is better than no thought whatsoever, because that's how you end up with, like, a lot of the, having been a teenager in the 2010s, and, like, a lot of the music that just came out for no reason had just, like, pointless aesthetics and just had no thought behind it, was, like, maybe one of the most frustrating things about, like, being inspired by that era of music, is you just go, oh, it's all surface level. There's no depth to this.
Yeah, well, I think you're definitely bucking that trend. Analog Heart, this has been a really fun conversation. I don't have any other questions for you, and I think we've been talking for about an hour. Is there anything that you'd want to leave on, or anything you'd want to say before I let you go?
Yeah, this is actually something I talked to John at Lonely Ghost about before, but and this goes back to our like 80% understanding versus 20% like me explaining things bit, but every song that I write has about three layers to it. There's the surface level, which is what you get with the lyrics, because I'm not a very conceptual lyricist. There's the sub level, which is what the actual situation is. So like, for instance, me explaining the deal with Wise Unwise, where I was bummed out about not being able to play that show. And then there is the third level, which is the deepest level, which is the personal meaning to me, which is best example. I had the idea of Thank You for Playing, which is a kind of like a bitter sounding song about not realizing you needed something or another in order to like function properly. I wrote that song because I was afraid of starting back up an Animal Crossing for GameCube save.
That's awesome context.
Yeah, and so each song has like a little bit of those three levels. Like obviously Windows 98 Maze is the most obvious one because it's like, it's named after the thing that is the third conceptual level, because there's the Windows 98 Maze screensaver that I have on my actual computer.
Yeah, and then there's also your double life in Animal Crossing that can be also be a source of pleasure and anxiety. I definitely know how that is.
But yeah, I think that's the only thing I really wanna get out there. I really appreciate you having me on. Yeah, you were right. It's about an hour and 10 minutes, so.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we've had a lot of fun, and I definitely learned a lot in chatting with you, so. Thanks
no
again
problem.
For coming on.
I really appreciate you having me.